first?
No need. The shens are clean.
Which is why we're here.
The lieutenant doffed his cloth cap.
Not going to build a forward base in the middle of a rad pit.
The officer's uniform was crisp and clean despite the long hours in the confines of the APC. His dark hair was combed flat, wings of silver at the temples. His dark eyes were quick and seemed to notice everything.
What do you think, Sarge?
Resting the stock of his blaster on a hip, the big man studied the wooded glade.
It'll do. Good trees for the cover. We're centrally located to all three of the vills. And not a stingwing in the area.
Puzzled, the lieutenant looked around.
How the fuck do you know that?
Too many nests in the branches. Birds would build their homes inside hollow trees for protection if stingwings were in the area.
Excellent. Tomorrow we start felling trees, 1 mile due south and east. I want a log wall 8 feet high and encompassing the entire area. Once up, we'll top it with the concertina wire.
Nasty stuff.
Deadly stuff.
Does it have to be that large?
Going to be a lot larger before we're done. Carry on, Sergeant.
Holstering his piece, the lieutenant walked to the men waiting patiently at the mouth of the cave and saluted. The men snapped a stiff-arm salute to the chest. The officer returned the gesture with force.
We came as fast as possible. What's the emergency, Corporal? Trouble with the locals?
The interior of the limestone cave stretched back for a good 100 yards. The floor was smooth with ripples that resembled the surface of a pond. The broken butts of removed stalactites covered the irregular ceiling, and insulated power lines crawled along the moist rock with covered light bulbs dangling at regular intervals. Far in the rear was a humming gasoline generator, perched safely on a pallet to keep it from ground seepage, and a shortwave radio on a nearby table crackled with static. Stacks of large boxes were arranged in rows, according to their contents. More than 100 empty folding cots lined a rough wall.
No, sir. Some hunters found us. We have them buried in the back under some rocks. It's these wired muties, ropey things, drop from trees and drain your blood unless you get them off fast. And if their stingers get under your skin, you die from blood poisoning. Triple bad. You go crazy, screaming and shitting yourself. Tom bit off his own fingers. I'd rather take a bullet in the belly.
How many have we lost?
14. Bill and I here are the only men left. It was getting bad, sir. The flapjacks, we call them that, sir, because that's what they look like. Well, they were getting bold. Hell, we found one of the suckers inside the cave. So we disobeyed orders, sir, cracked open some crates of grins, and went hunting. Pretty damn sure we got them all, sir.
The lieutenant waited a few minutes, watching their faces, then relaxed and cracked a smile.
Must have been tough. Well done, troopers. My compliments.
Thank you, sir.
A piercing scream sounded outside. Slapping the bolts of their blasters, the Sekhmen rushed out of the cave to find the sergeant running around the clearing with a translucent, pulsating mass on his back. The writhing tentacles were wrapped around his chest and face, the clear, ropey limbs visibly pulsating as the mutie drained off his blood. The corporal rushed forward brandishing a knife, but a dozen other Sekhmen perked their blasters, the rounds tearing the mutie apart. The riddled mess hit the ground and was torn to pieces by another fusillade. Staggering away from the dead mutie, the sergeant fell to his knees, bleeding from a dozen open wounds.
Help me!
The man's face and neck bristled with the torn-off stingers.
Poor bastard.
The corporal raised his blaster.
Don't!
The lieutenant slapped the gun aside. Rushing to the side of the fallen Sekhman, the officer brushed the matted hair off his sweaty face.
Easy, old friend. You're going to be fine.
The lieutenant quietly drew his hand cannon.
Just fine.
Foaming at the mouth, the dying man convulsed, blood welling freely from the slashes and punctures. The blue cloth of the uniform was now black over most of his body. Clicking the hammer on his piece, the lieutenant chuckled.
Hey, remember when we found that farm with the three beautiful daughters?
Wheezing for breath, the man fell over on his side, fingers clawing the empty air.
Remember those three blondes?
The lieutenant went to a knee and shook the man's shoulder.
The blondes!
What? The girls. Yeah. Yeah. They were so ready.
The blaster discharge slammed the body flat, the muzzle blast setting fire to the mutilated shirt. The sergeant made no attempt to move, and in seconds the tainted blood ceased flowing from the wounds. A SEC man gasped from the turret of the LAV-25.
Sweet Jesus! You killed one of your own men!
The lieutenant swung the weapon on the driver of the APC.
Say that again, and I'll open you like a self-heat. Charlie was a buddy, and I made his last thoughts happy. There was nothing else anybody could do. He was already dead.
It's the truth. He did the best thing, the only thing.
Confused murmurs arose from the rest of the troops, and they reluctantly accepted the information. Now they fearfully watched the trees, hands twisting on the stocks of their blasters. The lieutenant holstered his weapon.
Corporal, you're a sergeant now. Take 10 men and sweep this whole forest. Kill anything you find. Deer, birds, mice, men. I want a fucking clear zone 80 yards in every direction.
Sir!
The new sergeant turned to address the others.
Okay, you apes. Let's move with a purpose. Unless you want one of those stinking muties sucking out your gut someday.
Snapping the bolts on the Kalashnikovs, the grim SEC men swept through the forest, the stuttering fire of their pre-dark weapons rattling the dense greenery in the clarion call of death.
And we sure as hell aren't going to build the new capital of America in the middle of a muty pit, either.
The mountain winds carried away his words long before anybody else could hear. In the center of Front Royal, a stout tower rose from amid the lesser structures of the imposing ville. Thick growths of ivy climbed the walls, as if trying to consume a foe, and SEC men stood guard on the rooftop alongside ancient gargoyles, imported from Ireland generations earlier to do exactly their job, protect the keep from evil. Orange clouds heavily laden with toxic chems flowed across the horizon, thunder rumbling softly in a purple sky streaked with fiery slashes of yellow. A low wind from the south moaned over the ville, bringing the first hints of true winter. Splintery and gray from the acid rains, the thick oak shutters covering the windows were closed tight on every level, except to the fifth floor. There the wood was thrown open wide, admitting what sunlight there was, and offering a commanding view of the green fields and even hints of the distant shanty towns. The window glass was long gone, consumed by the world-shattering flash and concussion when Washington, D.C. reaped the reward of its foolishness, but stout iron bars still protected the openings from climbing intruders. The breezes wafting into the top floor of the keep smelled faintly of boiling laundry, wood smoke, baking bread, and horse manure. Somewhere in the ville below came the sound of troops marching, a horse neighing, slaves singing a work song, a woman crying, a fist fight, chopping wood, a gas engine sputtering into life and then dying. In the top room of the keep, several men stood around an old table studying the maps and charts spread out over its smooth surface. Their clothes were clean and without patches, their boots shiny with polish. Well-oiled blasters jutted from every belt and shoulder holster. Behind them, the walls were lined with wooden racks holding rifles with scopes, wax-covered boxes of ammo stacked neatly underneath for easy access. Next to the only door, a small plastic box rested in a wall niche, the joining edges of the case sealed with candle wax, making it absolutely airtight. Battered wooden chests near the windows were packed with Molotov cocktails, and plastic buckets of sand stood guard in wall niches, ready to quench any accidental fires from spills. A chandelier of 6 oil lanterns hung from the rafters of the room, and more stood unlit in wall niches. A tapestry bearing the crest of the Cotter family covered one section of the walls. Another bore a tattered flag of the United States, retrieved from a burning library. This was the war room of the fortress, although few called it that anymore, aside from the newcomers who stood belligerently among the local chiefs and SEC men. The room was full, but nobody stood side by side. A respectful distance was maintained between every occupant. The distance also gave the men room to draw weapons should the need arise. Nathan Freeman Cotter sat at the head of the table. His elbows rested on the chair arms as he bent forward to study the detailed maps and charts strewed across the tabletop. On the opposite side, Overton impatiently watched the Baron shift the papers as if dealing cards. The others in the room stood quietly while their leaders decided an outcome to the matter.